This is Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we hear excerpts from a presentation examining a lawsuit filed against the CIA for allegedly violating privacy rights of journalists and lawyers visiting Julian Assange at the Ecuadorian embassy in London. The presentation, sponsored by the First Unitarian Society of Milwaukee, will also look at how the lawsuit might affect the U.S. attempt to extradite Julian Assange.
Stay with us. I'm New York City attorney and activist Heidi Boghossian.
And I am attorney Marjorie Cohn, professor emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law and regular columnist for truthout.org.
In August 2022, a group of U.S. citizen attorneys and journalists sued the CIA and its former director, Mike Pompeo. They allege that the CIA, during Pompeo's tenure, spied on them during meetings with Julian Assange at the Ecuadorian embassy in London. The WikiLeaks founder and whistleblower sheltered there for 7 years in an effort to avoid extradition to the United States to face criminal charges. The lawsuit says that the CIA violated the privacy rights of those journalists and lawyers. Plaintiffs include journalists Charles Glass and John Getz, and New York City attorneys Margaret Kunstler and Deborah Herbeck, who have represented Assange. The suit seeks compensatory and punitive damages for the plaintiffs for the violations of their rights. It also seeks the removal of any information held by the CIA, which was collected from them during their visits to Assange, and prevention of the release of any of this information to a third party. The CIA, as listeners may know, is prohibited from collecting intelligence on U.S. citizens, although several lawmakers have alleged that the agency maintains a secret repository of Americans' communications data. Richard Roth, the lead attorney in this case, had this to say: "The United States Constitution shields American citizens from U.S. government overreach, even when the activities can take place in a foreign embassy and in a foreign country." Journalists and lawyers visiting Assange were required to surrender their electronic devices to Undercover Global before each visit. UC Global is a private security company which was providing security to the embassy at that time. The lawsuit alleged that the company copied their information and handed it over to the CIA. In early November, Deborah Herbeck and our own Marjorie Cohn discussed the lawsuit and the case against Assange in a program sponsored by the First Unitarian Society of Milwaukee. For our show today, we're delighted to bring you their remarks and their answers to several audience questions. Deborah Herbeck starts off the event. In addition to being a member of the Assange defense team, her law practice focuses on entertainment and small business law. And Marjorie is a member of the National Advisory Board of Assange Defense. Let's take a listen.
Thank you, Anne, for inviting me to address the First Unitarian Society of Milwaukee about this important matter. Together with my colleague, Margaret Kunstler, and two national security journalists, just this past August, we started a lawsuit against the CIA and Mike Pompeo and the Spanish security company UC Global and its former CEO, David Morales. And this is around the fact that when we visited Julian Assange in the embassy in Ecuador, we were spied on. Now, you may say, well, the CIA's job is to spy, and maybe that's not so terrible, but that's not the case at all. We're United States citizens, and we have the right to be free of unreasonable searches and seizure by the government. We were visiting our client, our doctors were visiting their, Julian Assange was a patient, journalists were visiting their sources, and we were in an environment where we had an expectation of privacy from US government intrusion. At the time of our visits, Julian was an asylee, essentially. He had been granted sanctuary in the Ecuadorian embassy in London because he feared that he would be extradited to the United States to face the sorts of charges he's actually facing now. He was given protection by the Ecuadorian government. So when visiting him, we had assumed, it turns out quite naively, that we were on safe territory. We thought the safekeeping and the protection of Julian turn over our electronic devices and our passports when we entered the embassy, and they were held in the custody of the security guards while we met with Julian. We had no idea that while we were meeting with Julian, in the very next room, the security guards were downloading information from our laptops, noting down numbers from our cell phones, making copies of our passports, not just the page with our faces and information on it for record keeping, but where we traveled, who we'd seen, and then putting it all back together again so that when we went and picked it up and left, we had no idea that these materials had been tampered with. And in some cases, like mine, it may not have made a terrible amount of difference. I feel violated, but I'm a media lawyer. I was visiting Julian to talk about things like whether a film company should be allowed to use his image in a documentary, etc. I don't have a lot of clients who whose information would have been on my computer that might have been compromised. But one of my colleagues, Nancy Hollander, she was representing Chelsea Manning at the time she visited Julian. She was representing prisoners at Guantanamo Bay, and still is, actively. And so the very government that was prosecuting her clients was accessing the materials on her electronic devices. And we remember this as we thought that these people were Ecuadorian government employees. We had no idea that, in fact, as it later transpired, it was a Spanish security firm called UC Global who had been privately contracted to provide security at the Ecuadorian embassy. And initially that was by a friendly government. And what happened was in 2017, David Morales, who was the CEO of the private security company UC Global, attended a conference for private security companies in Las Vegas that was hosted at the Venetian Sands, which was owned by the late Sheldon Adelstein. And he was boasting about the fact that he had this good gig, and that he had this sort of notorious person under his watch. And the personnel around Sheldon Adelstein notified him of that fact. And before you know it, Adelstein, who was, of course, quite close with the Trump administration, had arranged for Morales to essentially be flipped and turned into a CIA agent. And from that day forward, increasingly, every conversation, every document that was going in and out of the embassy, whether it was attorney-client privilege, whether it was a psychiatrist report, no matter what it was, every information that was on, as I said, our private cell phones, etc., was captured and transmitted to the CIA. And we know this. This isn't a crazy conspiracy theory. We know this because soon after Julian was taken out of the embassy in April of 2019, a couple of the security guards from UC Global became whistleblowers, essentially, for to tell people what had been going on. They hadn't realized that the material that they were collecting was being delivered into the hands of the CIA in order to beef up a charge against Julian Assange, or I should say 18 charges. I think Marjorie's going to go into that a little bit more. They thought they were protecting him. And so when they realized that, in fact, Julian was right, and this whole thing had, in fact, been about capturing him and then delivering him to the United States, they weren't happy about it. And they blew the whistle, and they disclosed the fact that David Morales, their boss, had been bragging to them about the fact that he was now working for the Americans, that the company was going to be quite rich, that he was a mercenary, that he suddenly went from taking maybe two or three trips in his entire life from Spain to the United States to taking 64 trips to the United States in the course of the 2 years following that conference in Las Vegas, sometimes to New York, sometimes to Washington, D.C. and Virginia, which happens to be where the CIA is, and frequently to Nevada as well, where his CIA handlers were primarily located. This has been disclosed in affidavit testimony in the courts of Spain. There's a criminal investigation currently going on into UC Global and David Morales, and it's in the course of discovery in that case that Julian's Spanish lawyers, Balthazar Garzon and Aitor Martinez, have secured discovery that has alarmed the Spanish court to such an extent that they have issued a formal request to the U.S. government for Michael Pompeo and William Avenina, who was a CIA person at the time, and a number of other potential CIA witnesses to give testimony in the Spanish case to clarify and explain the evidence that has been presented that is before the court in Spain, showing essentially there's technical evidence that some of the that the IP addresses in Virginia, that there are IP addresses in Virginia where some of this material was live streamed to. There's a wealth of evidence to indicate that UC Global was ramping up its surveillance activities and in direct communication with people in the United States who are very close with the Trump government, and in particular with Mike Pompeo. And this coincided with a speech by Michael Pompeo, one of his very first speech as the head of the CIA in April of 2017. He took the opportunity not just to, and in fact, barely to talk about what he was going to do as the new head of the CIA, and devoted most of his speech to a tirade against WikiLeaks. And in the course of that speech, he designated WikiLeaks a non-state hostile agency. And what that essentially did was put the organization in a category that enabled the CIA to ramp up some of its more nefarious activities without congressional oversight. The CIA is a spying agency. It is supposed to be protecting the U.S. National interests, and it does do things that, which however much we might find offensive, are technically legal when they're dealing with Al-Qaeda and investigating situations that are of true danger to the United States. In this situation, we have an organization we believe very strongly that they should be treated like any other publication. But regardless, Julian Assange was the head of the editor-in-chief at the time of a platform, an online publication that essentially existed for the purpose of whistleblowers being able to have a safe place to tell the world, what sorts, what things that were doing, being done by governments all around the world against their own people, primarily war crimes, but all sorts of violations of human rights were disclosed through the WikiLeaks platform. This is essentially, and then WikiLeaks would take steps to ensure that the sources were verified. They would take sure to make sure that the that the materials disclosed were accurate and verified. That the materials were newsworthy, just like any journalist would do. So whether you call WikiLeaks a publication, whether you call Julian a journalist, it really doesn't matter. The activities that were going on were essentially investigative journalism, and the publishing of the dissemination of the information was essentially the dissemination of embarrassing items for the United States and UK and other governments around the world. And that is, of course, what the press exists to do. It's to hold governments accountable. It's the very First Amendment, press freedom. And the point of that is that without some protection for people who are brave enough to, and just hardworking enough to dig a bit deeper and find out what's going on in our name, using our tax dollars, we wouldn't know enough about governments to be able to, when we have democratic elections, vote with the information we need to do that. So my time's running up and I'm running out, but I would invite any questions you may have about the case, which is primarily to bring attention to the fact that that the US in Julian Assange's case has gone above and beyond what anyone would expect in terms of its efforts and its willingness to breach the law to get him, as revenge for the disclosure of war crimes, as revenge for the disclosure of what's called Vault 7, which was a very embarrassing leak of CIA materials. And I would invite you in particular to revisit an article that didn't get enough of attention by Zach Dorfman and Michael Isikoff in Yahoo News in September of 2021 that went into very well researched, talked to 30 national security and government personnel, the kidnapping and assassination and the London shootout inside the secret war plans against WikiLeaks. This article did not get enough attention. And one of the things we're really hoping to do with our case is shine a light on what's been going on in your name. Thank you, Ed.
That was New York attorney Deborah Herbeck, who is also a plaintiff in this case. We now turn to our own Marjorie Cohn, who unpacks the indictment against Julian Assange and the request for his extradition to the United States.
The indictment against Julian stems from WikiLeaks' 2010 to 2011 revelations of U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan and so-called Cablegate. The Iraq war logs included 400,000 field reports about the Iraq war, 15,000 unreported deaths of Iraqi civilians, and the systematic torture, rape, and murder after U.S. forces handed over detainees to a notorious Iraqi torture squad. They included the Afghan war diary, 90,000 reports revealing more civilian casualties by coalition forces than the U.S. military had reported. Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! Called the Afghan war logs the most comprehensive history of war ever to be published during the course of the war. But perhaps the most notable release by WikiLeaks was the 2007 collateral murder video, in which a U.S. Army Apache attack helicopter gunship in Baghdad targets and fires on unarmed civilians. At least 18 civilians were killed, including two Reuters reporters and a man trying to rescue the wounded, and two children were injured. Then a U.S. Army tank drove over one of the bodies, severing it in half. And that short 4-minute video clip, which you can find on YouTube, it's called Collateral Murder Video, reveals evidence of three separate war crimes under the Geneva Conventions and the U.S. Army Field Manual. Cablegate was a collection of confidential cables that were sent to the U.S. State Department from foreign embassies and consulates. And the New York Times, The Guardian, Le Monde, Der Spiegel, and El País all agreed to publish simultaneously these cables after redacting or editing out the identity of the agents. Now, Barack Obama prosecuted more whistleblowers under the Espionage Act than all prior presidents combined. But even the Obama administration decided not to indict Julian Assange. They convened a secret grand jury and decided that they had what became known as the New York Times problem, because WikiLeaks did the same thing that the New York Times, Washington Post, The Guardian, etc. did. And if they indicted Julian Assange, they would also have to indict those news organizations as well. It was WikiLeaks' publication of the CIA hacking tools known as Vault 7, which Deborah mentioned, which the agency called the largest data loss in CIA history, that incurred the wrath of Trump's CIA director, Mike Pompeo. Vault 7 materials revealed electronic surveillance and cyber warfare by the CIA. It included the CIA's methods for breaking into smartphones, computers, TVs that were hooked up to the internet, Skype, stealing passwords, and circumventing encryption on Signal and WhatsApp, etc. And in 2017, after Pompeo called the WikiLeaks a non-state hostile intelligence service, as Deborah mentioned, CIA and government officials hatched secret war plans to abduct and kill Julian, according to the stunning Yahoo News report that Deborah also mentioned. Some senior CIA and Trump administration officials requested sketches or options for ways to assassinate Julian. Donald Trump himself, and you did not see this in the corporate media, which was is really an outrage. Trump himself asked whether the CIA could assassinate Julian and provide him options for doing so. Now, concerned that the CIA might kidnap or kill Julian, which could jeopardize a potential criminal prosecution, Trump's Department of Justice filed a secret indictment against Julian in 2018. It included, and they filed it in the Eastern District of Virginia, the U.S. District Court, which is the most right-wing court in the country, where the war on terror cases, so-called war on terror cases, have been filed. Those people lucky enough to even be charged in a court and not rot away at Guantanamo, which is another incredible, just, it's an outrage. But this secret indictment charged Julian with one count of violating the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act for receiving the documents, classified documents, from Chelsea Manning, who was the whistleblower. And this one charge carried 5 years in prison. That was in March of 2018. In May of 2019, the Trump administration's Department of Justice filed a superseding indictment with 17 counts under the Espionage Act, which carry 170 years in prison. So that's a total of 175 years in prison. And then in June of 2020, apparently realizing that unless they could paint Julian Assange as a hacker instead of a journalist, they might have First Amendment problems with all of their Espionage Act counts, because he has done everything that other publishers and journalists do protected by the First Amendment. They filed a second superseding indictment to beef up the hacking charge from the first indictment. And In order to bolster this charge, the FBI collaborated with informant Siggy Thorderson to paint Assange as a hacker instead of a journalist. Thorderson later admitted to the Icelandic newspaper Stundin that he lied about Julian being a hacker in return for immunity from prosecution by the FBI because he was charged with many, many felonies, including sexual assault, etc. After a three-week extradition hearing, in January of 2021, UK Magistrate Judge Vanessa Baratzer ruled that WikiLeaks should not, that Julian Assange should not be extradited to the United States because, given his fragile mental health from the years of confinement and UN Special Rapporteur Niels Meltzer concluded after meeting several times with Julian that he was suffering from prolonged psychological torture. The UK judge, Vanessa Baratzer, denied extradition. And keep in mind that Biden is continuing Trump's appeal of the denial of extradition. Instead of going along with his buddy Barack, which he likes to remind us that he does, if he did go along with his buddy Barack, he would have dismissed the request for extradition and dismissed this appeal. But Vanessa Baratzer ruled that Julian Assange would likely commit suicide if he were extradited to the United States for trial on this indictment and if he were held in the very, very heinous, harsh conditions of confinement in the United States. But later, after the extradition hearing, the United States was allowed to come forward with so-called assurances that if Julian Assange were extradited to the United States, he would not be held in the maximum security prison in Florence, Colorado. He would not be subjected to special administrative measures, which is basically holding him in isolation. And if he were convicted and sentenced, he could serve his sentence in Australia, not checking, of course, with the Australian government. But they were conditioned on Julian Assange not committing some acts which remained unnamed that would allow them to hold him in these conditions. Nevertheless, they would still hold him in equally onerous conditions in other supermax prisons with other very heinous conditions. So after hearing these so-called assurances, and I should say that the former UN Special Rapporteur, Agnès Callamard, rapporteur on extrajudicial summary and arbitrary execution, was skeptical of these so-called assurances. She said they cannot be taken at face value because of previous history. And she was referring to prior U.S. assurances that the U.S. reneged on. But the High Court in the U.K. accepted those assurances and reversed Baratzer's denial of extradition. And that was in December of 2021. In March of 2022, the U.K. Supreme Court denied Julian's appeal of the High Court decision. And in June of 2022, the Home Secretary in the UK approved the extradition of Julian Assange to the United States. On August the 26th, Julian filed his perfected grounds of appeal, asking the High Court to rule on issues that Baratzer had found against him on. This is not the suicide issue, but other issues. And they included that Julian is being prosecuted and punished for his political opinions in violation of the Extradition Act, that Julian is being prosecuted for protected speech in violation of the Extradition Act, that the extradition request itself violates the US-UK extradition treaty and international law because it is for a political offense, that the US government has represented the core facts of the case to the British courts, and that the extradition request and its surrounding circumstances constitute an abuse of process. This prosecution of Julian Assange is the first time that a journalist has been indicted under the Espionage Act for publishing truthful information. The United States has never prosecuted a journalist or news outlet for publishing classified information. And if Julian is ultimately extradited, tried, convicted, and imprisoned, it will send an ominous message to investigative journalists who would publish evidence of government wrongdoing. The point of this prosecution of Julian is to criminalize national security journalism. It actually involves the heart of what journalists do every day, which is to protect their sources, their confidential sources, and communicate with them in confidence, to cultivate these sources, to publish classified secrets. These are the pillars of national security investigative journalism. And this is what is at stake in this prosecution of Julian Assange. It will chill journalists from reporting classified information, which we need to know what the government is doing in our name, because they know that if they do that, they may suffer the same fate as Julian. And this, of course, is all in addition to the life of Julian Assange, who has been held who has been basically confined for 10 years now with no charges that have been the charges that have been filed against him, but he has been convicted of nothing. He has a wife and Stella Assange, two small children, and WikiLeaks has done all of us a great service. And so I am proud to say that I work on the National Advisory Board of Assange Defense and work with Anne and Deborah and many others to free Julian. There was recently a human chain of hundreds and hundreds of people surrounding Parliament in the UK calling for the release of Julian Assange. And I urge everyone to go to AssangeDefense.org and get involved in any way you can to free Julian Assange and persuade Joe Biden, Joe Biden's Department of Justice, to drop the extradition request and dismiss the indictment against Julian Assange. Thank you.
That was Marjorie Cohn, who is also a member of the National Advisory Board of Assange Defense. Marjorie and Deborah now answer a few questions from audience members. The first question is whether the attorneys have considered holding a mock trial in public to raise awareness of the issues involved in this case.
I think that's a great idea. Honestly, the anything creative we can do to bring these issues to the attention of the US public is really important. There has been increasing support of Julian in the case in general in the UK and in Europe. But in the United States, we're really far behind. And honestly, this is the center of where the action is right now. Julian would be out tomorrow if the Department of Justice just dropped the charges, just stopped asking for extradition. There is no case in the UK holding him. He's sitting in Belmarsh for almost 4 years, maximum security prison, awaiting extradition on an absurd indictment that the Trump administration brought. At the same time as there was this chain of 7,000 people around the UK Parliament, we also had a chain of people around the Department of Justice in DC, which was wonderful. It wasn't 7,000 people, but it was a significant turnout, and which is just wonderful. Randy Credico has been going around DC with this wonderful screen to just alert people about Julian Assange situation. Roger Waters is an amazing supporter and has been credited at his concerts. He's been on tour the last several months. He's been raising awareness of the plight of Julian Assange and what this really means for press freedom in this country. The activism has to start here. Has to come from the United States, because no government likes WikiLeaks. No government likes Julian Assange. The Obama government which is basically Biden, would have gone after him if they could have. They decided they couldn't, which is great. But they're actually going after him now. They're going after him by continuing. The DOJ is continuing to pursue extradition on these charges, which are essentially, as Marjorie said, going to impact every single journalist in the United States and by extension, us.
The next question concerns what has changed in the United States to allow Daniel Ellsberg to leak government documents decades ago, but not Julian Assange. The questioner also asked about Joe Biden's continued candidacy for president.
Daniel Ellsberg was prosecuted. He was prosecuted under the Espionage Act, and the reason that the charges were dismissed and he didn't spend the rest of his life in prison was because of government misconduct. And so they had to ultimately dismiss the case against him. But he was very much prosecuted under the Espionage Act. And this Espionage Act really does not go after espionage. It has been not been used to go after espionage. It's really been used to go after opponents of the government. It was used in, it was passed in 1917 and used by the Woodrow Wilson administration to go after people who opposed World War I. It was used against Eugene Debs. It was used against socialists and communists. It was used against the black press. And now, more recently, it's been used against whistleblowers and now for the first time against a journalist. In terms of your point about why are the criminals not in jail and Julian is, the very reason that Julian Assange was prosecuted and the substance of all of these indictments is his revelation and WikiLeaks revelation of war crimes by the United States. And it is the war criminals who don't want this information to see the light. And I agree with you 100% that Joe Biden should not be running for president again for many, many reasons. I think it is a loser. I think it would hand the election to probably Rick DeSantis because I think that Trump has been tarnished by the midterm elections. But that's another discussion altogether.
Another question dealt with critics and media claims that Julian Assange has blood on his hands. One charge is that he was careless and failed to redact sensitive names and information from released documents.
There has been a campaign of character assassination against Julian Assange dating back to pretty much when the revelations that are the subject of the his imprisonment and the indictment came about, not coincidentally, pretty much as soon as, 2010 was when the Chelsea Manning revelations started to come out. And it was shortly thereafter that there were allegations that were later proven to be, that were investigated and dismissed by the Swedish government that were incredibly harmful to Julian's reputation. Basically what we do in this country, or perhaps the world over, is we create pariahs out of our heroes. And it's so much easier to impact rights that affect everyone once you demonize somebody who's being charged with a particular offense. So in terms of the specific issue about the redaction, I can tell you that it was actually WikiLeaks who slowed down the release of the materials because of the extensive efforts that they made to redact the names of sources and informants for the U.S. government who were local people on the ground in Afghanistan and Iraq who might have been in danger had their names been disclosed. And it was actually the traditional press, the mainstream media, The Guardian in particular, who ended up revealing the information that ended up in disclosing these people's identities. WikiLeaks actually taught the other media outlets how to redact. This was such a distortion of the truth. And yet people believe it because that's what they read in the papers and because the papers are lying.
At this point in the event, The moderator asked Marjorie and Deborah to talk about Daniel Ellsberg's testimony at the Assange extradition hearing. Here are their responses.
Yes, Daniel Ellsberg, who, as was said, is one of the three co-chairs of Assange defense, along with Noam Chomsky and Alice Walker, testified very poignantly at Julian's extradition hearing about how important and critical WikiLeaks' revelations of these war crimes was. And he drew parallels between the revelations of these war crimes and what he and Tony Russo did in the 70s, which was to publicize the Pentagon Papers, which revealed what was really happening with the Vietnam War. And of course, that revelation, together with the valiant struggle of the North Vietnamese, the National Liberation Front, led to the defeat of the United States, who left with its tail between its legs and ended the Vietnam War.
I'm sorry, I just want to pick up on that point and go back to what Jim was saying, which is the issue about shooting the messenger. Daniel Ellsberg, and he's a huge hero, he was actually the whistleblower. Chelsea Manning, who's now out, was the whistleblower here. They're both extremely brave, and I'm very grateful for their actions. But they actually did have some level of obligation that they have a defense because they're whistleblowers, but that was breached by the revelations. Julian is in the hands of somebody who received this information and then just let us know about it. This is truly a situation where this is shooting the messenger in every step of the way. He had no duty to protect anyone. He had no duty to the United States government. He's not a U.S. citizen. He's not even a U.S. journalist. What would happen if the Chinese government decided to say that an American journalist who disclosed some humanitarian breaches by the Chinese government should be extradited to China to face charges for embarrassing the Chinese government? Or it's just absurd when you think about what we're doing, the policing of the world in this way, to criminalize anyone, wherever they are in the world, who says something that the U.S. government doesn't like.
An audience member asked Marjorie and Deborah to address the failure of the courts to prosecute war crimes and to hold the government accountable.
There was a complaint filed in federal district court in Northern California on behalf of an Iraqi woman claiming that Inder Comer was her lawyer, claiming that the invasion of Iraq and the commission of war crimes violated international law. It was a war of aggression in violation of the UN Charter. He was absolutely right on the law. It was ultimately thrown out. I don't think that there is a federal court in the United States that would agree to a prosecution for war crimes committed by every U.S. president that I can think of going way back. And certainly the most recent ones. But there is the International Criminal Court, which the United States has completely not ignored, but refused to join, although 100 U.S. senators could they agree on anything? Well, they did agree that Russian officials should be prosecuted by the International Criminal Court for what they're doing in Ukraine, which is amazing because the United States doesn't think that the International Criminal Court should be used to prosecute Americans for their war crimes in Iraq or Afghanistan, or Israeli leaders for their illegal activities and occupation of the Palestinians. So there is pending in the International Criminal Court charges against leaders. It's a criminal court, so they charge individuals, leaders during the Afghan war. And it used to include U.S. leaders as well as Afghan leaders, but with a change in the court and the prosecutor, they've backed down on the charges against U.S. leaders. Charges against Israeli leaders are still pending. The U.S. is trying to undermine that. But I don't think that we're going to see any meaningful prosecutions of U.S. war criminals anytime soon.
I'd just like to second that, and let's get that unfortunately is a bit of a pipe dream that the courts in the United States would hold government, anyone responsible for our war crimes, because the laws just aren't set up that way. But what we do have is a First Amendment. And the way that we hold war criminals accountable is by the press investigating and telling the voters what the government's doing in its name. And that is the closest we can get to accountability for war criminals in the United States. And that is why this case is so critical.
Another audience member asked Marjorie and Deborah what they thought the government's legal defense to free speech claims raised by the Assange defense team might be. He also asked if Julian had access to a computer during his detention.
There is a limitation on free speech, and it's the famous case where it said you don't have the right to scream fire in a crowded theater. And so the government, the U.S. government's defense, I guess you would say, to charges of violation of freedom of speech is we have to protect national security. And as Noam Chomsky eloquently said in one of our Free Assange panels, national security means what the government doesn't want you to know they're doing in our name. It's kind of a catch-all for, well, we can't tell you, but it's going to impact national security, so you can't freely talk about it or publish it. It is true that Julian Assange is a national of Australia, and here he is being prosecuted, or the Biden administration is seeking to prosecute him in the U.S. as a foreign national under U.S. law. That's something that invariably would be litigated if he was being extradited to the United States. And in terms of whether Julian has access to a computer, I don't know. I think he does, but maybe Deborah can speak to that.
I don't believe he does. He's in maximum security prison. He does finally, after his lawyers in Britain, Gareth Pearson, her team, have done a tremendous amount of work to improve his conditions in prison. But it's still a maximum security prison. So he is allowed to speak to his lawyers on a fairly regular basis. By a telephone, basically, and get information about, you know, what's going on. But he, to my knowledge, does not have access to any computer.
On the question about Julian having blood on his hands, the moderator noted that at trial, no prosecutor could name anyone who had been injured or killed by WikiLeaks disclosures. Deborah Herbeck responded thus.
We know that had there been any adverse consequences of these leaks, we'd all be hearing about it, and we haven't been. And yes, in the testimony, it was to the extent that you can testify to a negative, there was testimony that there was no such results. But I just want to get to the fundamental point of, like, the fact that these are called WikiLeaks disclosures even just drives me mad. I follow the news regularly. I didn't hear about any of this from WikiLeaks. I heard about it from Rachel Maddow. I heard about it from the New York Times. I mean, the mainstream media amplified the disclosures, and that's why we all have the information we have. And yet Julian is the only person sitting in jail. WikiLeaks is the only organization being tarred with this brush. Now, if the problem is the hypothetical problem is that if national security secret information gets out there, people, informants might be in danger. Why aren't the other outlets that are actually, nobody goes on to WikiLeaks, nobody, I mean, except for researchers and academics who are researching human rights around the world, who find the WikiLeaks platform incredibly, the WikiLeaks archive incredibly useful. Regular people getting their news do not get it directly from WikiLeaks. People that might want to use the disclosures against the US government interests are not getting it from WikiLeaks. They're getting it from mainstream media outlets. And if it's a crime to disseminate this information, then it's a crime that everyone should be in jail for. And I think we can all agree that that would be a terrible, terrible thing. So I just want to make that point.
Another question was about instances in which the law has been weaponized against Julian Assange and not applied with an intent for justice. Here's what Marjorie had to say, with comments from Deborah following.
This Espionage Act has been selectively enforced. It's called selective enforcement. Government officials leak national defense information to the press all the time, but only when critics of the government, like Julian Assange, do it, are they prosecuted. General Petraeus is a perfect example, where he was telling his girlfriend national defense secrets. I also want to add that there was a recent release of a report which found that the United States ranks 26th rankings of democracies in the United States. And Attorney General Merrick Garland just announced the end of last month, a new policy, a new revised Department of Justice news media policy, where he wrote, "These regulations recognize the crucial role that a free and independent press plays in our democracy, because freedom of the press requires that members of the news media have the freedom to investigate and report the news. The new regulations are intended to provide enhanced protection to members of the news media from certain law enforcement tools and actions that might unreasonably impair news gathering." Well, that is the height of hypocrisy, given the prosecution of Julian Assange, which Merrick Garland is pursuing full speed ahead. And I just want to mention one more thing, and that is that during the Donald Trump administration, where there were leaks from the Supreme Court, and I think we're talking probably about the Dobbs opinion, which ultimately overturned Roe v. Wade, Trump said, "You tell the reporter who it is, and if the reporter doesn't want to tell you, bye-bye. The reporter goes to jail. When the reporter learns he's going to be married to a certain prisoner who's extremely strong and tough, I mean, he will say, you know, I think I'm going to give you the information." And he said the reporter would give up the identity of the leaker as soon as they realize they're going to be the bride of another prisoner very shortly. He was threatening that journalists be raped by other prisoners. That was then President Donald Trump.
I 100% support everything that Marjorie just said. And governments just don't play by the rules around the world, but even in the US. We have to stop being naive enough to think that the justice system is blind, that if it's in the United States government's interest, they will abuse the process time and time again. And this is absolutely demonstrated in this case. As recently as today, there's a report about how the United States government meddled in the Ecuadorian elections to try to, of all things, support the right-wing opposition party against Correa, who was the president who offered asylum to Julian, and basically said, "Well, you know, we'll help you get in as long as you promise to hand us over Julian when we're successful." And that's ultimately, it's a little bit more complicated how it all went down, but that's ultimately what happened. They managed to smear the government that had given Julian Assange sanctuary. Then that led to someone else being elected. And ultimately, in order to curry favor with the US government, the Ecuadorian government opened the door and let the UK take him and hand him over to the United States. So there's no process that the government is respecting, sadly. We're very far from that.
At the conclusion of the proceeding, Marjorie Cohn emphasized the importance of getting involved in the campaign to free Julian Assange. She also underscored the larger issues implicated in his case. Here's what she had to say.
I've said this, but I want to reiterate how important it is to get involved in this campaign to free Julian Assange. As Deborah has mentioned, the corporate media has done its best to tar Julian Assange, and even a lot of Democrats, people, so-called liberals, just dismiss him because of the trumped-up charges. They weren't even charges. It was an investigation, sexual assault investigation in Sweden, where the two women later recanted. And so that, plus the publication of some DNC emails that revealed bad acts and by the Hillary Clinton administration, have led people, some people on the left, to throw out the baby with the bathwater and fail to realize that what Julian Assange and WikiLeaks are being, what Julian Assange is being indicted for, is revealing U.S. war crimes and torture. And that is really, really important to keep in mind. And so anything people can do to support this campaign to free Julian, again, AssangeDefense.org is the website. I strongly encourage you to get involved.
If you have any comments or questions about this segment or any others, please visit us at lawanddisorder.org. That's lawanddisorder.org. One word, lawanddisorder.org.